break the bounds of thinking that learning is about content, it's about knowledge.
They are enriched and they go away with a feeling that they can tackle the bigger strategic problems in their organisation more easily.
There's no way that we can continue because the nature of work is changing.
The focus needs to be on keeping ourselves relevant and ahead of the game.
Welcome to the Training Journal podcast. I'm editor of Training Journal and your host, Jo Cook. Thank you so much for all the feedback and amazing comments on our relaunch episode. Paul Westlake said that he didn't envy me having to edit the episode together, and he was right. It was quite the editing process, but I think it was worth it. In the last podcast, we heard a lot about artificial intelligence being a big theme for 2024. In this podcast, we start by discussing what L&D practitioners need to focus on in the coming year. And of course, we start again with a comment about AI. Paul Westlake is Digital Director at People Unboxed and had this to say.
People need to get on board with AI. AI is here, and rather than shying away from it, maybe we should be asking the question, what can AI do for me and how can it change the way that I deliver training to my people? So it's poised to revolutionise L&D, whether we like it or not, with AI-powered platforms, automating tasks, providing personalised recommendations and delivering dynamic learning experiences. But I also think AI will be used to develop intelligent tutoring systems, chatbots for learning support, that sort of stuff, predictive analytics, help you identify training needs. So rather than shying away, I think practitioners need to be asking the question, how can AI make my job easier? How can AI make the solution even better for my learners?
Thank you, Paul. Love this. It's so easy to shy away from something that is big and challenging. However, as we know from going through the COVID lockdowns, the digital learning, working and communication that many people had avoided came to the fore very quickly. So I think it's better to at least have a mild curiosity in this now. Continuing this point about not shying away from technical changes is learning strategist from LAN, Andrew Jacobs.
L&D needs to understand and embrace technology better. We need to understand what these tools are that we're adopting and actually understanding how they are being used commercially and within the consumer market. When a tool like ChatGPT can cut through into a consumer sector, that's a big change. And we can't just hang on and go, well, it's not going to relate to us. We need to embrace technology because we have to understand the data piece as well. There's no point being in learning if you don't understand the data. And that's not just data about learning, that's data about performance.
Paul Westlake builds on this, reminding us about impact and helping professionals understand the needs of their learners.
They might identify the most effective learning methods to use and track the impact of their training programs, which has always been the holy grail that L&D people are looking for. And I think where that's going to lead is into even more personalization and micro learning, which is the second thing people need to embrace. So they need to embrace personalization to meet the needs of an increasingly diverse learning population. So by providing personalized learning experiences and breaking down complex topics into bite-sized chunks, L&D can ensure their employees receive the training they need as and when they need it. And these bite-sized chunks, I think, is also going to be something that people really need to get on board with. So that doesn't mean taking out content. It means providing content in small, digestible chunks. And personally, I would be tying that in with some spaced repetition solution to make sure that the learning is embedded.
It's great that Paul references tried and tested learning theory, such as spaced repetition. With focus on AI and future predictions, it can be really easy to forget the important theories and approaches that have been with us for a long time. Well, the good ones anyway. Kathy Hoy, CEO or CLO 100, suggests our own skills need to be top of mind.
Practitioners, for me, really need to be focusing on what it means to be an L&D practitioner. I think this could be the year for investing in ourselves within L&D. Are we really worthy of the term practitioner and professional? I've recently had this conversation with Dr. Keith Keating, who's the author of The Trusted Learning Advisor. You know, and there are some brilliant people in our industry operating in the kind of brain science space and who have a really, really good understanding of how adults learn. I would recommend checking out Lauren Waldman, Learning Pirate. She's fantastic in this space, but I would love to see more L&D practitioners focusing on this year.
Susie Miller, executive coach, continues this line of thinking.
One of the marked things I noticed from the delegates I trained in 2023 was just how competitive the industry is for practitioners. So I think that in 2024, the focus needs to be on keeping ourselves relevant and ahead of the game. As a learning practitioner myself, for me, it's a clear priority to make sure that you never stop learning yourself. Of course, everyone will be focusing on how important it is to keep up with AI and its impact on the industry. I completely agree with that. Working with generative AI has certainly been a game changer for me when I design and develop content.
Andrew Jacobs builds on this thought about how we approach the learning offering.
L&D practitioners need to be thinking about continuous learning and chunking stuff down much more than we have been. Continuous because it's about going beyond the formal structured activity that we do and building it into the workplace learning activity as part of workplace performance. Chunking down because people want just enough for them to enable to do a job now. And that's a shift. We have to move away from that approach that we've done in the past. Thirdly, I think there's a piece about understanding how to be much more agile and adaptive within our learning strategies. Not agile in a project management sense, but agile in terms of fluidity and flexibility, being able to bend and support the demand that's coming from the organisation, not just driving through a supply-led approach. And that's going to be a big shift from a lot of people within learning and development.
Back in 2014, the CIPD said in their L&D New Challenges, New Approaches report that the pace of advancement in science and technology is unparalleled, and that agility is the dynamic capability of an organisation to change strategic direction and organisational competencies. But is it that L&D doesn't or can't do this? Or is it that L&D is held back by organisational silos, decision makers, or even culture? Tom Brown, Director of Dodds Training, one of TJ's sister companies, highlights that things are always shifting.
There will be lots of AI and tech predictions for 2024, and also there's going to be talk of big change. The truth is that every year has a lot of change now. That's just the world that we live in. The rate of tech-driven progress is exponential, and also there's just volatility as a constant. On the human side, though, I think the slow but dramatic change we're seeing in the workplace is generational change in the makeup of the workforce. I think we're going to see an evolution in the types of management skills we focus on as more baby boomers leave and more Generation Z join the workforces. So expectations, understanding of power dynamics, levels and types of tolerance are really different between these two generations, as are native skill types, particularly digital skills. Management skills are pretty much never off the agenda, but I think the big adjustment of these in response to a generational shift in the workforce is just getting going. So practically, I think this means focusing on intra-team dynamics, communication skills, what foundation/essential skills your workforce really needs, and adaptable management styles, which for me is very important in managing multi-generational teams. I think most places have been thinking about this change for a while, but every year the balance shifts again, so don't forget about this in your planning.
I know there are lots of people that don't like the terms Gen X, Boomer and so on, and I do try to avoid them myself. However, we can't get away from a workforce where age is just one element that creates different motivations and needs for people to manage and for L&D to cater for. And speaking of differences, let's head back to Susie Miller for her expertise on accessibility and how practitioners should be looking at this important subject.
The area where I really see potential for practitioners to develop in 2024 is around accessibility. One of the advantages of the fact that the L&D industry seems so frustratingly slow in making progress to make all learning content accessible and inclusive as the default is that it makes knowing how to do this a unique selling point. I've had first-hand experience which has shown that this knowledge has been instrumental in getting practitioners new roles and improving their job prospects within organisations. Coupled with this is the fact that learning more about how to include the access needs and preferences of learners undoubtedly improves your practice as a learning practitioner. And this is not only because it challenges you to think and to do things differently, but also, most importantly, because it really puts learners at the centre of the design and development experience. And so it leads to learning that's more personalised, meaningful and effective. A final advantage of a focus on accessibility is that it also provides a sense of purpose to creating learning, no matter what the subject matter of the resources you're working on. For me, a really interesting key takeaway from a Deloitte report cited by the World of Learning's Workplace Learning and Performance Trends report for 2024 was that more than 80% of respondents reported their top focus areas as being purpose, DEI and sustainability. For me, there is no better way to contribute to this agenda and to achieve something positive and meaningful in 2024 than by finding out how to make your learning content accessible and inclusive for everyone.
Daniel Taylor, Learning and Skills Development Manager at the National Lottery Heritage Fund and one of our latest bloggers, deserves the last word on this question about practitioner focus.
There is also a really negative focus on sectors of the community, including LGBT+, queer, trans colleagues. Learning and development really has the place to lead on this debate, but also to represent. There is also a real need for learning and development to be representative of our wider community. We've seen this with the Black Lives Matter movement, and we will continue to see this within all the variety of different communities that exist. We need to step up, and we need to represent. This might be a learning and development aspect for ourselves so that we can upskill.
Well said, Daniel. I wanted to know where our contributors recommend that decision makers in learning and development and their organisations needed to put their focus on this coming year. Gail Watson, Managing Director at Sync Skills, suggests embracing culture change.
It feels that because of the uncertainty, because of artificial intelligence and the whole hype around it, a lot of people are feeling incredibly vulnerable. Indeed, the roles are going to change. We're going to have to work differently. And for many, it also feels like we're trying to get rid of them. And they will push back on these changes. It is our role as decision makers and as leaders to build a culture where we enable everybody to upskill, embrace those new tools and feel comfortable with the change.
As they say, change is the only constant. The Future of Jobs report from the World Economic Forum predicted that 85 million jobs may be displaced by a shift in the division of labour between humans and machines, while 97 million new roles may emerge that are more adapted to the new division. And this was a report from 2020. David Perring, Chief Insights Officer at Fosway Group, makes a point about building skills and the expertise of people, which can be ourselves, our L&D teams, and the workforce or clients that we are supporting.
I think the main things that L&D decision makers need to focus on in 2024 is how they re-energise, rethink learning as a practice overall. We need to break the bounds of thinking that learning is about content, it's about knowledge. We need to align ourselves to the skills agenda and think about how we build people's expertise. That's not just about knowledge recall, it's about how well people genuinely perform, and trying to break the content obsession, thinking about how we innovate our practice as learning and our responsibility as learning teams is probably what I'd encourage L&D decision makers to focus on. And maybe in parallel with that, also think hard about how you measure success. you need to be focusing on high value and how you can report the evidence, the outcomes that you've created for your organisation. That's critical to sustaining investment in learning, but also creating the time and the capacity and focus and the credibility and value of learning, both for individuals, for managers, and for your senior leadership team as well.
Andrew Jacobs focuses on technology, but this time it's much more about using different pieces of technology and how they work as one.
I spend a lot of time talking to people about learning strategy and where things will be in the future. And the decision makers, i.e. the people with the money, need to think across a range of areas. The first one is how to integrate the advanced technologies. Look at the stack of technology that you have. Look and see how you can enhance what you have. Have conversations with your suppliers and speak to suppliers and see how you can integrate the different technologies that you've got. There is no one size fits all. There is no single solution that will do everything for you. So understanding how to put them together and integrating them is going to be essential.
John Kennard, content editor at Fosway Group, picks up on this point about making this work for individual organisations.
What works for you might not work for another business, might not work for another L&D department, but you really need to look at what's out there and how you can best use it and make an impact in what you do. So things like critical thinking of the soft skills, which we hope that AI is going to allow people to prioritise and focus on. Things like critical thinking, I think, are going to be big for 2024.
Prioritisation and critical thinking both contribute to how we think about ourselves and our work. TJ blogger until recently, Sue Stockdale focuses on what she's been learning and noticing in the last year.
I've learned a lot about the state of leaders in the workplace because of how they show up at coaching sessions. I've noticed how much they value a space to think and really how little time they have to create this for themselves in any given day. And sometimes I think that we've come to believe that being busy is a sign of being productive. And I really don't think that's the case. Based on giving people time for reflection, thinking and getting perspective in a coaching session, they are enriched and they go away with a feeling that they can tackle the bigger strategic problems in their organisation more easily. Now, perhaps that reflection and thinking used to happen on the commute to work, and now with so many people working virtually, then they go from home to work and to meeting and to meeting. So one thing I'd love for leaders to do more of next year is to make time in between their meetings to have time for thinking and reflection.
If you search on trainingjournal.com for reflection, we have a few articles for you to dive into. One in particular by Mary Holmes talks about reflecting in three different time frames. We're all used to reflecting back on something, but Mary also talks about reflecting forward and reflection in action, actually in the moment when something is going on. Whenever you choose to reflect, it can be put to good use because, as Andrew Jacobs points out, work has evolved and is evolving. It's now about how we embrace, support and develop it.
If you're an L&D decision maker, you have to work on how to adapt to flexible learning. There's no way that we can continue because the nature of work is changing. We've got hybrid working, we have hybrid learning. We have to change how we will be delivering and supporting learning within organisations. So understand what remote and hybrid learning models are and understand how to support people who work in that way. If you're a learning leader, you have to look at how to support data. Everything should be evidence-based. Not evidence-based purely on your learning activity, but evidence-based on the performance. If what you're doing isn't making a difference, then why are you doing it? And you have to be able to prove the impact and effect of the activities that you've been undertaking. Lastly, if you're an L&D decision maker, you need to think about what workforce trends will be in the future. So how are you future-proofing the skills within the organisation? How are you understanding and maintaining knowledge within the organisation? And how are you thinking about what change will be within the organisation? How is it going to impact on people's skills and the capacity for them to work?
David Perring discusses leadership challenges and brings our attention back to the L&D team, as it's these people that are serving others.
I think it's also about making sure that you support the L&D team. These are uncertain times, not just because of budgets, because of the innovations in technology, and making sure that you're embracing the right innovations at the right time. Having an innovation plan is going to be something that's front and center for the year ahead, but also thinking about the connections of learning into the wider employee lifecycle, making sure you have great connection to performance, internal mobility, careers, skills. These are things that also need to be lined up, not only in terms of business connection, but also the connection into the wider HR and the people experience as it's being led by the people function. There are going to be a lot of headaches in the year ahead, but we also have the expertise to innovate, and it's a great catalyst for change.
Speaking of headaches and change, I wanted to look back a little in order to continue looking forwards. I asked what has changed in L&D since COVID reared its head and we had the global pandemic with everything that it entailed. Jeanette Tessier, TJ blogger and author of Get That Course Online, starts with looking at the digital learning adoption that accelerated.
I think the main thing that has changed is obviously there is much more awareness around online training, virtual, live and also on demand. I think there's much more awareness of that, but also recognition that there is very definitely a huge difference between the really good stuff and the stuff that is just ticking boxes, for example, which I would say that a lot of online delivery, particularly pre-recorded, digital on-demand online delivery, really suffered prior to the pandemic because it was just put together as a sort of a quick and easy tick box exercise to get something done. I can remember training in fire extinguishers of all things, and it was a multiple choice set of questions, which was ridiculous. I had no better idea of which fire extinguisher to use after I'd come out of that training than I did beforehand. But I think what has changed since the COVID pandemic is that there is this recognition that online training is just as good, can be, should be just as good as face-to-face training. And I think the really decent organisations, the really switched on L&D teams, also recognise that they need to pay appropriately for decent online training. So there was an awful lot of assumption that anything delivered online was going to be cheaper than anything delivered face to face. And I think since the COVID pandemic, I think that now people have more of an experience of what online training and online training interventions can be like. They are now getting better at recognising when something is good quality and when something is just kind of there to make up the numbers.
I've had lots of conversations with L&D freelancers and small business owners about what they should charge for virtual training versus in person. Some organisations have seen it as the cheaper and less good option in the past. However, with the mass adoption during the global lockdowns, there's a much better understanding that great learning is great learning, no matter if it's in person, virtual or self-paced. Daniel Taylor shares his thoughts on the digital adoption during COVID-19, as well as the need to work with the marketing and communication teams in larger organisations.
I'm really aware that both for myself and the learning and development community that we have become incredibly responsive and flexible. I know particularly that I've never turned around content so quickly, and it's also connected so well with our learners. And the key learning for me is it doesn't have to be glossy. For example, a simple webinar running like a fireside chat, speaking to a subject matter expert, spreading the details of a new policy, works so well. This can be snipped up and reused by our MarComms teams, and then repurposed in a multitude of different ways. But it doesn't have to be perfect. It does, though, have to support the learner, and also the range of learning needs that exist.
Gail Watson talks about virtual training and the need for skills development.
As we're looking forward towards 2024, I think it's quite interesting to also look back and reflect on the change in L&D since COVID. As I have specialised in all sort of blended and virtual classroom facilitation since 2011, I've been feeling privileged to have witnessed a real shift since COVID. virtual facilitations and digital learning have become normalized and accepted both by learners and facilitators, including most subject matter experts. Everyone agreed that online learning works and can deliver impact. There are, however, stigma attached to it. Many facilitators don't really enjoy it, and many learners find it boring. I could talk for hours about this topic, but in a nutshell, the key issue remains that content is still driving the design of a learning experience instead of behavior and applicable competences. And it is something clearly L&D practitioner should bring their focus on.
I think if you ask any specialist from any area within L&D or organisations, they will always say that people need more skills and experience to do a job because, well, the specialists are just that. It's a challenge in the current financial climate about where managers put their budget. Do they spend it on something that can be done, albeit not as well as it could or should be for the impact and results people want, or on something that feels more urgent? John Kennard comes back to the work that L&D departments do.
For a time, there was an all too brief understanding of learning and development's value, not least how effective remote working and learning can be, and also how L&D can lead on the acceptance and rollout of tech innovation. And I think it was, you know, if there was any upside to it, it was how effective you can be without being in an office, how effectively you can learn remotely, etc. My hope is that as businesses revert to an office environment, that a lot of the newfound flexibility that people have in their working and their learning isn't lost, and workers can still enjoy that, because I know that companies are going to look to return to quote unquote business as usual. And I don't think that will be a particularly great thing for a lot of L&D teams, because so many of them thrive on being able to facilitate people to learn at scale, and to do it at scale often means to do it remotely.
David Perrin connects us again to the culture and feeling of connection and recognition in our changing work environments.
So much has changed since the pandemic and was a catalyst for change. We saw that in our stats when we did our digital learning realities surveys from 2018 through to 2023. There were significant changes in the support that was given to help people understand what learning they need, the range of modalities that were used, and the increase in supporting learning in the workflow in the workplace. There have been significant changes on a scale of between 10 and 25%. This is things that come out from our research, and to some extent you could say everything has changed. And a lot of that has been driven by the new world of work that I suppose the COVID environment created for us or accelerated for us, especially around hybrid working, people's adoption of digital processes. Beyond that, actually, there's lots of people who still go into the office, who still have a virtual, not a virtual place of work, but a real place of work in shops and in a field force, in a warehouse and other locations. The readiness of those to also embrace learning technologies and new ways of thinking about how they learn has been a seismic change. So the challenge for us is to connect with those audiences in their new places. Make sure they feel as though they're developing, but have the culture around them that recognises and supports development.
There's been lots changing at TJ, so do make sure to check out our articles, features, videos, and news on trainingjournal.com. And if you never want to miss out, make sure you subscribe to the newsletter too.
In the last section of this podcast, I want to come back to the individual and ask our lovely contributors what they were focusing on for their own professional development this year. David Perrin starts us off with hard data.
The area that I'm focusing on myself for 2024 is all around data, analytics, and storytelling. These are the future skills. And that means understanding data hierarchies. It understands how you cross-connect data to tell more interesting stories based on the insights that you have around what's really happening in your world rather than opinions that float around it.
I'm with David on this. Data has always been part of L&D's role, and now I'm editing Training Journal, I'm seeing this in a whole new light. Insights from data mean we aren't moving around in the dark. It sheds light on decisions and future projects. Daniel Taylor talks about focusing self-development outside of L&D.
I'm trying to learn more without it being from the usual sources. So I'm trying to move away from learning and development books, webinars, conferences, things like that. I'm really aware of how you can learn from the world around you. For example, I always recommend programs like The One Show. This can be great at showing how you can facilitate and run webinars. Learn from how people run podcasts. Again, a great facilitation tool. Brilliant resources in podcasts such as The Diary of a CEO. Absolutely amazing pieces of learning which you can bring into your everyday practice. So, my challenge would be to think a bit differently and see the world around you.
This is echoed by Leo Locher, who contributed to the Reading List crowdsource article on TJ in December, where she highlighted that she read a lot of biographies and other books outside of the L&D field and how they had impacted her personal development. Michelle Parry-Slater, who's one of our wonderful TJ bloggers, as well as Learning and Development Director at Kairos Modern Learning, is focusing on coaching skills.
I've been using coaching style questions in my consultative learning and development for a number of years, but never really investigated what is coaching and how am I a practitioner in that space. In 2022 and 2023, I undertook learning more about Time to Think from Nancy Klein, studying under Meg Pepin for the thinking environment. And it was excellent. It was so excellent. And so in 2024, thanks to studying under Margaret Burnside from Cake PD, I will be investigating myself as a coach, something I've never investigated in the past in depth because I'm so impatient. I always want to tell people the answers. So I've done a lot of mentoring because the gig is different there. But for coaching, well, let's see what 2024 brings. What Nancy Klein's work through Meg Pepin has taught me is to slow right down, is to do better listening. And I'm primed, I hope, to be a good coach. Not that I'm moving into coaching and away from organisation and learning and development, but more about my practice. And all of us, of course, can always learn. And I think as learning professionals, we often put ourselves on the back seat when it comes to learning. So for me, 2024 is the year of learning.
And Sue Stockdale finishes us off by focusing on meaning.
One of the areas of self-development that I'm going to be focusing on for my professional development in 2024 is the area of transpersonal coaching. Now, that's where the clients that I work with will be able to focus on a state of being where their inner and their outer worlds merge to bring a greater sense of interconnectedness. And it really is about thinking beyond the personal. Now, why that is important for me is because I'm seeing more and more leaders experiencing a loss of meaning or connection in their lives. Many have got to senior levels, they've worked hard over the years, and then they're now asking themselves, well, what's it all about? What's my bigger purpose? How can I make a difference in the world? And being able to coach those leaders to get that sense of interconnectedness, for me, will be how I can add most value in 2024.
Thanks to TechSmith for providing Audiate, one of the tools I've used to edit this together, and to all the contributions from our learning professionals in this episode. The next TJ podcast will focus more on artificial intelligence and what it means for our work in L&D. Until then, I'll leave the last word to Gail Watson.
So I'm wishing you all a wonderful year 2024, full of exciting growth opportunity and new learning adventures.